Good morning, everybody. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 a.m. And it is Monday morning. That means we're going to do the Monday morning movie reviews. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, because it's a jokey time. We're also going to talk about the best movies based on true events. So best true stories. And we'd love to hear from you on that. Our phone number and text number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected, though, is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. Now, we're in the middle of the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So Colin and Eric will not be joining us this morning because they've basically been at the Music Box Theater for 4 days. and they're going to be there until Thursday, night. The Chicago Critics Film Festival is happening right now. They're very busy with that stuff, doing that. And I understand that Colin's shorts programs went over really, really well, or the first one did over the weekend, went really, really well. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the titles that have been shown and that will be shown in the coming days. And you can go to the Music Box website, Music Box Theater website, for more information about the rest of the Chicago Critics Film Fest, which we're going to talk a little bit about. But since Colin and Eric are out, our good friend Jim Liskowski is going to join us. And Jim is kind enough to fill in for us, and we've got the new movies to review as well. So that's what's coming up. So let's welcome Jim back to the show. Hey, Jim.
Hey there, Nick. Good to be back as always.
Yeah. So now have you gone to the festivals so far?
Oh yeah. That's how I celebrated my 40th birthday on Friday.
Wow, 40, huh?
Yeah.
Wow, congratulations, buddy. Happy birthday.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Can't believe it.
Yeah. No. It gets better. So.
That's what I hear. I'm gonna be optimistic.
Yeah. No. Absolutely. Yeah. 40's a big one. I remember when I turned 40. That was a long time ago. But yeah. So, well, happy birthday, man. All right. So, tell me a little bit about what you saw at the Chicago Critics Film Fest. We'll start off with that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I was able to attend the very first day. Put on, of course, by the great members of the Chicago Film Critics Association, and they all work very hard in sort of curating a number of films that they see at other festivals around the country. And they want, basically, the people of Chicago to experience all these wonderful movies as well, because sometimes they don't get, a proper release, or they maybe end up on streaming later down the road. So, this is a great opportunity to catch some, maybe unknown films on the big screen and in a place like the Music Box. Mm-hmm. So even if you've never heard of the titles, you're bound to discover something that's right up your alley. And, the critics that choose the lineup have great taste, of course. There's still a lot I'm excited to catch up with myself. But one in particular I have to, no pun intended, support, is the latest from Andrew Bajalski, and that's called Support the Girls. Mm-hmm. And that one's playing again on Thursday at 4 p.m., but I got to see it on the first day. And this is really one of those very special movies that take place during the span of a single day. And we follow, like, this ensemble of characters that populate a Hooters-like sports bar called Double Whammies. And among them are the general manager, played by an award-worthy Regina Hall, as well as a very, very perky Haley Lou Richardson. And the owner of the establishment is played by a familiar face, character actor named James LeGros, who gives one of those kind of like out there comedic performances that I think you in particular, Nick, will really cherish.
Well, I think he's great. I've always loved that guy, so.
Yeah, me too. But it's a little bit like what Thomas Jane kind of does in Boogie Nights, it's just, it stands out in a way that wouldn't be out of place in the film like Used Cars. It's just really, really broad, but kind of wonderful at the same time. And I just said, this is going to be a performance I think Nick's going to highlight when he reviews this. But this film is also more of a dramedy. There are real stakes throughout the story, particularly how Regina Hall is just trying to hold herself together in this, in this crazy restaurant environment, and trying to help so many others, including her family. And it becomes really overwhelming at certain instances. But I think anyone who's ever worked retail or in the restaurant industry will find something to relate to in this movie. I think it could be Bajalski's best work, and every time Haley Lou Richardson is on screen, I just lit up. I had a smile on my face. It couldn't be more different than her turn in last year's Columbus, which was very low key. Here, it's more of like an outlandish comedic performance. But this is a very special movie that I hope people will get behind. I just think it could turn into a little indie sleeper hit along the lines of something like Office Space or other great workplace comedies of the past. So I was very glad to catch Support the Girls, and it's playing again on Thursday.
So Thursday at the Chicago Critics Film Festival at the Music Box, they're showing Support the Girls. If you can't make it Thursday, it will get a wide release in August.
Yes.
So, that's Support the Girls. Anything else that you saw?
Really quickly, I saw another winner, this film called Fast Color, which reminded me a little bit of Midnight Special in how it took kind of like the, maybe, you know, borrowed a little bit of Starman, you know, at least the narrative framework, and kind of subverted it into something a little bit more low-key, a little bit more character-focused. And this time it's more along the lines like a post-apocalyptic superhero movie. And it's set in the near future where it's a world where the earth has kind of gone dry. Water is no longer offered as a public utility. It's a really interesting story of this woman named Ruth, who is a woman on the run, basically because she has some extraordinary powers that we sort of learn about as the story goes on. And she reunites with her young daughter, and it sort of becomes this really nice movie about family and internal conflict, as well as, you know, this really sort of empathic attempt to give this trio of women a sense of empowerment in a world that seems to undermine them. So it's a real feminist kind of superhero movie. And I mean, it starts off a bit slow, but really, really rewarding as it goes on, and surprising in how things play out. It was a really great way to kick off the fest because it was the first movie that showed, and it's a real crowd pleaser that I think could turn into a cult classic. It's really terrific, and that's Fast Color. I hope people get to see that.
Fast Color. Okay, cool. All right, anything else at the fest?
One more, okay. I would say, that's playing Thursday that I got to see a sneak preview of, and that's a really remarkable documentary called Abducted in Plain Sight, which its original title, I think, was called Forever Be. But for fans of the true crime docudrama miniseries, there's so many of those nowadays, particularly on Netflix. But this is one of those very good examples of a riveting true story that will make you angry and mortified and also leave you more and more surprised as it goes along. We get introduced to a particular family in the 1970s that were kind of stalked, essentially, by this charismatic and manipulative pedophile. And it's a really interesting history because I guess at this time, even the term pedophile wasn't really a part of the mainstream culture, or at least people weren't using that term at that time. And so a lot of people were kind of naive. Parents were very naive about friendly neighbors. So this really, I mean, it's one of those stories, too, that you don't want to go into great detail because so many surprises and revelations pop up throughout the story that really make you sit on the edge of your seat. So it's incredibly well done documentary, and audiences will be very riveted in talking about its content and the way the story is presented. It's quite good, and I believe that's also playing Thursday. That's called Abducted in Plain Sight.
Okay. All right. Well, there's some of the other stuff, and I know that I saw online that Colin's shorts program this weekend went really well, and it was well attended, and they've actually had nice big crowds all weekend long for the Chicago Critics Film Festival, and it will continue through Thursday at the Music Box Theater, which is why we're not having Colin and Eric on, because they have to sleep for a couple of minutes before they go back to the Music Box and end up staying there for another 4 days in a row. So that's what's happening at the Chicago Critics Film Festival. Again, you can check out the Music Box Theater website for more details. There are tickets available and more screenings happening all the way through Thursday. And, you know, we congratulate Eric and Colin for the hard work that they have done. And, Jim, thanks for...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I'm really excited to go tomorrow night because Paul Schrader is going to be there for his new film.
Right. Right. Paul Schrader's new movie with Ethan Hawke. And they're going to screen that, and Paul Schrader's going to be there for the Q&A. That's going to be really cool. So we'll talk about that, too. All right, Jim, hang on, okay?
Okay.
All right, Jim Laskowski is with us. He is filling in for Colin and Eric, who are taking this weekend off because of the Chicago Critics Film Festival. And again, all the information that you need, schedules, all that stuff, go to the Music Box Theater website. We're going to take a break for the news, and we'll come back. We'll talk with Jim about the new movies and about his latest podcasts and get some information about that as well. All right, we'll take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It is Monday morning, so we're doing the Monday morning movie reviews. Colin and Eric are off this weekend because they've been crazy busy and still crazy busy with the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is happening at the Music Box Theater through Thursday. So make sure you check out all the information for that. So Jim Laskowski is kind enough to fill in for us, and we're going to talk about the best movies based on true events. And my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's Monday, so it's time for the Monday morning joke. It's a jokey time. So Jim, by the way, is also the founder of the Now Playing Network, which is nowplayingnetwork.net. And we're going to hear all about that as well. So let's welcome Jim back. Jim, welcome back, man.
Thanks again.
All right. So tell everybody about Now Playing Network and then like the Voices and Visions podcast as well.
So the Now Playing Network is host to a lot of great pop culture podcasts that cover everything from music to film with a variety of different guests and creators, familiar names, like, of course, Jim Hanke with Vinyl Emergency and Eric Childress with Movie Madness. But we also have a lot of great, great, great hosts like Elric and Brian with Pure Cinema Podcast, Brian and Shay with Drinking at the Movies, Brad and Al with Directors Club, Patrick Rapol with Drex of the Damned, and Bill Ackerman supporting characters. And also, when I find the time in my very busy schedule, now that I pretty much teach Monday through Friday, I also host my own interview show called Voices and Visions, in which I get to talk to a wide variety of directors, actors, writers, musicians, just talent that I'm interested in learning more about. And one of the more recent guests I was very lucky to talk with happens to be one of my all-time favorite character actresses, Melanie Lynskey. And she could not have been more delightful and captivating as you would expect. You know, the kind of charm that she displays on screen really carries over during her interviews, and she's just really excited and engaging to talk, you know, about her work and her history, and just, you know, she's the real deal. I mean, her latest film we talked about, and it's called And Then I Go, which is pretty much playing on demand right now, and we focused on that film, but you know, it's a dark story. It's about teen angst, isolation, and school violence that kind of escalates. But she had such, like, again, an empathic approach towards her character. And when talking about the film, it's you get the sense that she's not an elitist kind of, you know, Hollywood starlet or something, but a real artist with genuine sensitivity. And, you know, we talked briefly about some of her past films, and she in particularly loved working with Soderbergh on The Imposter. And I of course mentioned both you and me and our love with Shattered Glass, because she has a small role in that as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, she's got so many independent films and so many great supporting performances, a list that kind of goes on and on. So she turned out to be one of my favorite interviews to date, for sure. And I hope people can go to nowplayingnetwork.net or voicesvisions.net to check out that interview.
Yeah, she's a terrific actress. And, you know, I think you know, a lot of people will probably remember because she burst on the screen in Heavenly Creatures. Her and her and Kate Winslet were unbelievable in that movie. And but she's always been, you know, like one of my favorite character actresses that you see from time to time and kind of don't remember the name, but she's always good. So she's consistently great, Melanie Lynskey, and you could check that out. Now, I understand that you also interviewed Brad Silberling.
Oh, yeah. That was not too long ago as well. And, yeah, you know, he's promoting another sort of straight to a VOD film that he recently done. It's been like 10 years. I hadn't realized how long it's been since he's made a movie.
Wow.
But his latest is with Ben Kingsley and An Ordinary Man, and it's really good. It's again very low key sort of character study with only two people pretty much as the main cast, and he did a really good job with this film. I think, you know, it's the kind of movie that you'd think would be a great play as well, just because of, you know, there's not that many locations and, again, a limited cast. But it's really well done. And when you have, you know, Ben Kingsley as your lead, of course you're going to be enthralled. And it's not unlike kind of, you know, his sort of initial bad guy style of acting that he did in something like Sexy Beast. So it's really, really well worth seeing for the performances. And, you know, of course, Brad Silverling and I briefly talked about what it's like having to remake a Wim Wenders classic, essentially, because I brought up his, you know, hey, I'm a supporter of City of Angels,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So we had a good talk.
Yeah, no, he's a good director. He's been doing a lot of TV work. He's done a lot of TV work over the years. Hasn't worked on a lot of films, but his latest is An Ordinary Man with Ben Kingsley, and you can check that out. And you can check out the episode of Voices and Visions it's episode 55, and so that's where you can check that out at nowplayingnetwork.net. All right, cool.
Great, thank you.
All right, we got a couple of new movies to review here, and then I'm going to go through the box office as well. So let's start, Jim. Tell everybody about Overboard.
All right. Absolutely. I'm very interested in hearing what people think of this one. It's the feature film debut from sitcom director Rob Greenberg, and it's essentially a bilingual gender reversal remake of the 1987 Goldie Hawn Kurt Russell comedy of the same name. Like I said, reversing the idea of the original. This time, it's she is the struggling single parent, and he is a spoiled playboy, both of which are played by Anna Faris and Eugenio Derbez from How to Be a Latin Lover. And, of course, the reliable Anna Faris plays Kate, and a widower preparing to be a nurse. She supports her three daughters by a variety of different jobs, including delivering pizzas and working for a cleaning service, while Leonardo, on the other hand, is this irresponsible heir to a construction supply empire and lives out kind of like a Hugh Hefner kind of lifestyle aboard his $60 million yacht, while his sister Magdalena tries to gain control of the family business. So after refusing to pay Kate for cleaning his boat, Leonardo falls overboard and washes up on the shores of her small seaside town with no memory of who he is or where or how much money he comes from. Frustrated at her brother, Magdalena pretends Leonardo is dead, leaving him in the hospital so she can claim their father's company. Meanwhile, Kate discovers his plight when it's reported in the local paper, and she allows herself to be persuaded by her best friend, played by Eva Longoria, to exact revenge on her pompous former employer by pretending Leonardo is her husband, enabling her to force him to cook and clean and tackle household chores while she's busy studying. So with the help of her daughters and a community of friends and coworkers, they all convince Leonardo to come home with her, and the two soon settle into this partnership. And, well, will they discover the true meaning of family and love instead of money? And, well, you just have to wait and see. But, I've been pretty much on board, no pun intended, with nearly every performance by Anna Faris, who is just a delightful comedic actress that I've adored, and one of the few tolerable elements of the Scary Movie franchise. She's just got great timing and a presence that lights up the screen. And, well, once again, she is kind of only the saving grace in this rather dismal, lifeless, lame excuse for a romantic comedy that makes the original look like duck soup. you know, they may have had good intentions by reversing the genders or, you know, trying to look beyond stereotypes, but really, everything here just falls flat. There is no chemistry between the two of them, which is kind of an essential element in the audience kind of getting behind the story in the first place. And I don't mind films like the original Overboard or something like House Sitter, which, you know, involves deception and con artists to some degree, because you had Goldie Hawn believably working alongside very talented co-stars like Kurt Russell or Steve Martin. And, you know, the premise of the original film is really stupid, but the only reason it worked was just you genuinely liked the two leads, even if essentially they were engaging in criminal behavior. So, but this one is just a really lazy remake to the point of even like recreating scenes from the original or lifting dialogue to kind of make it seem like a clever callback, which it isn't. And in the first half hour of this just, it was unbearable with some ridiculous slapstick. And it only goes more downhill as it goes along. I found this take on the original Overboard to be abysmal. Pretty much laugh-free, very long at 2 hours, and just a complete waste of time and talent. This is a mess that I insist people stay away from.
Okay.
It's really awful.
Okay, hang on, Jim, okay?
Okay.
I'll tell everybody what I thought of Overboard as well, but we got to take a break here right now. When we come back, I'll tell you about Overboard, and we got another new movie to talk about as well. Jim Leskowski filling in for Colin and Eric on the Monday morning movie reviews this morning, and we'll be back after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studios here on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and the great Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday morning, and so that means that my dad's going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey, jokey, jokey time, and it's the Monday morning movie reviews. Colin and Eric are off this weekend because they are very, very busy, smack dab in the middle of the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which they helped to program and put together and are hosting. So they're off this weekend. Check out the Music Box Theater box office or for the theater website for more information. There's a bunch of movies that are still coming up. Paul Schrader, writer-director, is going to be there tomorrow night for the screening of his latest movie. And all that great stuff is happening at Chicago Critics Film Festival. So they're off. So our buddy Jim Leskowski, who you know from the Now Playing It Network, and you can check out nowplayingnetwork.net for more information, has decided to help us out and review the new movies this week. And before the break, Jim, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right. Before the break, Jim told us about the latest remake of Overboard, based upon the movie from 1987, which I can't believe is 31 years old. So it's the Goldie Hawn Kurt Russell movie from 1987, and it's been remade with the genders being switched and so on and so forth. Jim told us all about it, and now I'll give you my review. It is awful. Truly one of the worst movies I've seen all year. I'm a fan of the first movie. It's got a creepy sort of subtext to it.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a very kidnappy kind of a vibe to what happens in the movie. But you know, like if you look at the subtext of the movie, it's kind of creepy and weird. But the fact is, as you said, you know, when you have like Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn in the movie together, and obviously they have chemistry, you know, they're a real life couple, and they're both very funny in the movie, and they carry it along even when it's at its most sort of creepy. Because the plot is inherently pretty creepy. And you got, you know, like Roddy McDowall is really good in it. And there's it's just, you know, and Gary Marshall did a nice job directing it. And so, I mean, it's one of those movies. If it's on cable, I'll watch it. It's fun. It's cool. But man, this thing is just terrible. And I'm a really big fan of Anna Faris. I think she's great. And she can't do anything with this. She can't save anything about this. And Eugenio Derbez, I know he's very, very popular in the Latin community. Like he makes films that are very, very popular among that group. But his American movies have been really bad. I mean, just not good at all. And I don't really see the reason why this guy's a massive star. I don't get it. And I don't, you know, He also, I don't know how old he is, but he seems way too old for Anna Faris, and that was bothering me throughout the movie as well.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Yeah,
And I did. I mean, I don't know how old he is. He could, you know, he could just be maybe 6 or 7 years older, but he seems much older than she does. And that as them supposedly at some point maybe becoming a couple seems weird to me. I thought all the subplot stuff, what they tried to do with bringing elements from the first movie, like you said, taking swatches of dialogue and scenes directly from the first one, doesn't work. The whole subplot involving who's going to run the company and the sister, yeah, and all that stuff, that doesn't work at all. You don't care about anything that happens. I didn't care about the kids, and I know that they tried to make them as cute as possible, and they tried, the whole I'm going to teach the kid how to ride a bike without the training wheels and all that stuff, and they all start to like him, and he learns his lessons and all that stuff, and that's in the first movie, is what's in the original movie as well, but it's pulled off much better because of the cast. But everything about this movie is just miserable, and you're not kidding. It's long. Oh my God! I mean, it's yeah, it's about 2 hours long, and it felt like it was 10 hours. And I didn't laugh once. There was not one time that I laughed. All the slapstick stuff that they put the main character through at the construction site and him flying over into the dumpster with the wheelbarrow, none of that is good. The attempt to make some sort of camaraderie between the guys that work at the construction site, mm-hmm, that doesn't work either. In fact, nothing works in this movie. It's just miserable, and it's not even remotely funny. The original movie is flawed, but at least, entertaining. This is just not even entertaining. It's easily one of the worst movies of the year, without question, and a waste of Anna Faris's talent. The only thing that they got right in this movie, this is one thing that I will say, is that I think it was, she's wasted in the film. There's no question about it. It's a waste. But the casting of Swoosie Kurtz as her mom is inspired.
Yeah, no, that's a good choice.
She's so perfect to play Anna Faris's mom. Unfortunately, nothing. She's given nothing to do, less than nothing to do. So this sort of like really great job of casting Swoosie Kurtz as Anna Faris's mom goes to waste. So hopefully at some point, maybe they'll make a good movie together and she could play her mom, because it's great casting. Outside of that, there's nothing to be offered from this movie. It's a terrible movie. Overboard, one of the worst movies of the year. So, all right, Jim, let's move on. Tell everybody about Tully.
Happy to. This is the third collaboration between director Jason Reitman and writer Diablo Cody, who previously brought us Juno and Young Adult together, two films I really liked quite a bit. Tully is more akin to Young Adult, which also starred Charlize Theron. So we have a rather complex character study surrounding the difficulties of a mother named Marlo, who audiences basically just get to meet right before she's due to give birth to her third child. She and her husband, Drew, played by Ron Livingston, already have their hands full with the two other kids, but with the new arrival on the way, they bravely prepare themselves for what they know is going to be, probably a rough go, but they're excited to bring the baby home. And Marlo's brother comes into the picture, who also knows about the sleepless nights and the potential exhaustion that Marlo is about to face, and suggests that they get help in the form of a night nanny, someone who can look after the new baby in the wee hours while mom and dad get some much-needed rest. Marlo dismisses the idea at first, but once she and Drew have little Mia home and Drew is consumed with new responsibilities at work, Marlo starts to reach the end of her rope pretty quickly. She makes a call, and one night, help arrives in the form of Tully.
Okay, hang on, Jim. Jim, hang on.
Yes.
We're going to continue. We got to take a break, okay?
Sure.
Hold on 1 second. We're telling you all about Tully. When we come back after the news, Jim will finish telling us about the plot and then what he thought of it. And then I'll tell you what I thought of Tully as well. It's the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower, and we're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, and my main man, the best, Steve Cochran at 6 for your morning drive. We're going to talk about the best movies based on true events and all that other stuff. My dad's going to call in and tell a joke. 312-981-7200 for talk and text. And Colin and Eric are off this week because they're smack dab in the middle of being very, 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 very busy with the Chicago Critics Film Festival, which is happening at the Music Box Theater. So filling in for them this morning is our good friend Jim Liskowski, who you can check out at nowplayingnetwork.net and more. Before the break, Jim started to tell us about the movie Tully. Jim, welcome back.
Thank you much.
Okay, so continue to tell us about Tully. So she hires a night nanny. Correct.
Correct. She's pretty overwhelmed, as is the whole family. So the night nanny arrives, and that happens to be the title character, Tully, played by the rather luminous Mackenzie Davis. And Tully is a young, sort of fresh, confident, optimistic woman who, despite her age, her relatively young 20-something age, seems to know exactly what to do to take care of both Mia and her exhausted, emotionally depleted mom. So to Marlo's surprise, she begins to form a very close bond with this unconventional nanny, and as the bond grows, it proves to be very healthy and helpful to some degree for both women. And Marlo begins to learn that though she may be experienced at motherhood, she's never really completely come to terms with how much of an emotional toll it can take. And so Tully's arrival just may be, the saving grace, the key to at least making some sort of sense out of all of this and just being a great source for stress relief. So I have to say that the last couple of Reitman films didn't quite work for me. So I walked into Tully with some trepidation, but an open mind nonetheless, because I do enjoy Diablo Cody as a screenwriter and was eager to see another collaboration after, the really, really good young adult, had a lot of honesty and pathos. And as far as Tully is concerned, I was pretty much in love with this film from the get-go. It shines a light onto motherhood in a way that I don't know if we've seen before, and it really just shows how parents can be really bogged down by the demands of being a parent, and it shows that everyone kind of just needs a helping hand, and that parenting is not a job for just one person. It gets a little dark and intense at times, but it's also really insightful and really goes deep into the struggle that Marlo has here. And I just think it's an important film about self-care and being able to ask for help when you're overwhelmed. There's a bit of a narrative choice later in the film that we can't go into great detail on, but normally I would have thought it to kind of be a ridiculous twist, but it actually ties in thematically and adds even more of an emotional weight with this character's journey. So by the end, I was incredibly moved and really kind of shook to my core. And this is coming from someone who isn't a parent. It's just, I love movies about compassion and growth. And Charlize Theron is just incredible here again, as she's been for a while now. And Mackenzie Davis is almost just as good. And I just, Tully is really, it really knocked me for a loop. I walked in kind of going, not sure about this one, but it is without question one of the very best films of the year, and it might even be my favorite Jason Reitman film with young adult kind of not very far behind it. But I absolutely love this movie and love Charlize Theron, and I cannot recommend it enough.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's a great movie. It is an absolutely great movie and a tremendous performance by Charlize Theron. I was not a big fan of hers for many, many years, and but lately, she's been doing some really amazing work, and She's really, really strong in this movie, and she, as she was in Young Adult. The combination of Diablo Cody, Jason Reitman, and Charlize Theron is obviously very special, and she's remarkable in this movie. And Mackenzie Davis is terrific as Tully, and there are some wonder. I mean, Ron Livingston is great as her husband. Mark Duplass is her plays her brother. He's also very good in it. It's a well-rounded cast, but it's a really beautifully written movie that at times is just. I mean, there are moments in the first third of the movie where it's like I don't have kids either, and watching this movie, I was like, I'm glad I don't have kids. I mean, this is absolutely crazy. I mean, you know, there are moments in the movie, you know, it's so well handled. There's a moment in the movie where, you know, she's got her kids in the car and they're trying to find a parking spot in this parking lot, and the kid in the, you know, she's got a troubled kid, one of her boy has been, well, they call him a troubled child, and he's like sort of one of the focal points of the movie, and how they handle that relationship and how they handle this child is one of the focal points of the movie. But there's a scene in the movie where, you know, the kid is kicking the back seat of the car and the other girl is crying, and you know, she's well 9 months pregnant and about to have a baby, and all of this stuff is happening, and you're just, it's really nerve-wracking when you're watching the scene. And Charlize Theron just handles it beautifully. And you know, there are several scenes where, you know, there's an incredible scene where she confronts the principal at this school about her troubled child, where she just kind of can't, she's had it, she can't take it anymore, and that's wonderful. And then what the character of Tully does and how she sort of changes Charlize Theron's character slowly, and the growth that happens between the two of these characters is really beautifully done and really handled well. It's interesting because, especially in Juno, Diablo Cody had this very distinctive style of writing, and her dialogue had a very sing-song kind of off quality to it. That's not the case here. There's nothing sort of, because Juno was one of those movies that was so distinctive in terms of the way the dialogue was written and in terms of the way it was delivered that it was a little off-putting. You had to get used to it. You know what I mean? It was one of those things that was just so distinctive that you had to kind of get used to it. This is very human, and the dialogue itself is really nicely written, and the relationships between all the characters are terrific. And, you know, the thing that happens later in the movie, I didn't even think twice about it. I thought it was, you know, it didn't even register to me. I didn't think it was dumb or anything like that. And like you said, it really does make sense thematically with the rest of what's happening in the movie.
Right.
There are moments in it that are really, really funny and really touching. And, you know, it's a movie that, you know, like you said, it's about compassion. It's about asking for help and needing help. But also it's about looking at your past and what you've done in the past and how it affects now and your relationships now. Ron Livingston has a wonderful scene late in the movie, a bedside scene, because his character, you know, he really aggravated my parents. I saw this movie with my folks, and my dad's like, it's all this guy does is play video games, because my dad was so angry because, like, this woman is really sort of struggling here, and the husband's upstairs playing video games, and my dad got so angry about him. My parents were so frustrated about this, and I was thinking to myself, I mean, it is kind of frustrating, but it's like, you know, the other thing is, it's they make a point about how busy this guy is with his work, and that takes up a lot of time. So it's not that he's an unlikable character. You want him to help out more and be there more, but it's made clear that this guy's got a pretty all-consuming job, and it's made pretty clear in the film. But he's got a beautiful scene at the end of the movie that just really made me well up, and I think it's that scene justifies everything that he's done throughout, And the final shot of the movie is gorgeous. The final moment of the film, so emotionally perfect and so beautiful that, you know, when it cuts to black at the end, it's just gorgeous. It's beautiful. It's a great movie. It's one of the best movies of the year. And I can't say enough about Charlize Theron's central performance in it. And it's great stuff. It's really great.
Yeah,
stuff.
There's also a moment in the movie where I thought of you too, because I know you're a huge Cyndi Lauper fan. So there's a
Oh my god! I lost it during that. There's a scene in the movie where, you know, Tully convinces Charlize Theron's character, the character, that she needs to get out. They need to go into New York and have a few drinks and just get out. So they get in the car, and as they're driving, they end up going to Brooklyn. But they get in the car and they end up driving, and they're showing a montage of how far they had to drive, and it's a different Cyndi Lauper. They were clearly listening to Cyndi Lauper's greatest hits.
Yeah.
in the car. And it's just this, like, every Cyndi Lauper song imaginable is in this montage. And you're right, I was losing it. I was
that's
the best, man. There's two women going out to have some cocktails and get away from the kids, and they're blasting Cyndi Lauper. There's nothing better. There's nothing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a great movie. A truly, truly great movie. So everybody should see Tully and stay away from Overboard. Those are the things. Next week we've got, what do we got next week? We got that movie where somebody tries to break into, I'm trying to remember. Breaking In. It's called Breaking In. And then we've got Melissa McCarthy going back to school in Life of the Party.
Oh boy!
Yeah, that should be a fun weekend. All right, Jim.
I should just stick to the Chicago Critics Film Festival.
That's
for the
probably
week.
What you do. Go to the Chicago Critics Film Festival. So, all right, Jim. Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
Oh yeah, thanks. Thank you again. I'm always happy to help out.
Okay, buddy. Hang out. There you go. There's Jim Leskowski. We'll talk to him soon. Check out NowPlayingNetwork.net for his podcast. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, I'll give you the box office, and we'll talk about some of the numbers that that were made at the box office this weekend, the winners and losers, and all that cool stuff. So, stay tuned for that after the break. Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. I want to thank Jim again for filling in and helping review the new movies. Eric and Colin will be back next week for all the new movie reviews and stuff like that. And now we're going to go through the box office for the week. I'm going to tell you guys who were the big winners and who were the big losers. Number one at the box office this week again, Avengers Infinity War. That's not a big surprise. A really strong second weekend, too. $112 million, bringing its total up to $450 million already. And it went over $1 billion worldwide already in record time. This movie is just, you know, making money like crazy, and people are going back to see it a couple times. So, yeah, that was your big winner, Avengers Infinity War. And not a real big surprise either, and I think it's probably going to stay at the top for at least until 2 weeks, I think, until Solo comes out on the 25th. And, so we'll see how Solo does at the box office. Number two is Overboard, the terrible movie, as you just heard, with Anna Faris, just an awful, awful movie, needlessly remaking the movie with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn, and it's terrible. $14.7 million. That's okay numbers, you know. It filled a void where there wasn't really a lot of straight up comedies out there, and or at least, you know, sort of family comedies, what this movie purports to be, but really isn't. Number three, A Quiet Place, $7.6 million. It's up to $160 million. Massive hit, as we've all talked about. By the way, they did a hilarious takeoff of A Quiet Place on SNL over the weekend. Donald Glover was the host, and they did a really, really funny bit taken off on A Quiet Place, and it was called A Kanye Place, and it had to do with, you know, Kanye West's latest antics, but within the context of A Quiet Place. Very, very funny. Very, very funny bit. Number four, I Feel Pretty, Amy Schumer's movie, $4.9 million, $37 million total. Not a hit, not doing well for Amy Schumer. Number five, Rampage, $4.6 million, $84.7 million total so far. Underperforming a little bit, but doing, you know, in America, underperforming, but doing very well overseas. And that's just The Rock and a bunch of monsters destroying Chicago. So I had fun. I had fun. Number six, Tully, the terrific new movie that we just talked about, Jim and I just talked about with Charlize Theron. $3.1 million, and had a smaller release. It's not in as many theaters as a lot of the other movies. It still didn't do great, but you know, we'll see if it's got legs, and hopefully people will go back and see it. And but I highly recommend it. Number seven, Black Panther, still making a lot of money, $3.1 million. I think people are going back and seeing this before they see Avengers. So there's two Black Panther movies in the top 10 for the second week in a row. And its total is $693 million total just in America alone. Number eight is Truth or Dare, $1.8 million this week, up to $38 million. And it didn't cost anything to make this movie. Super low budget. That's what they do with these Blumhouse horror movies. They don't have big stars in them. They just have, like, you know, it's like weird horror concepts or tricks. And then you know, they make the movie for under $10 million. And then they, you know, whatever they gross over that is gravy. Number nine, Super Troopers 2 with $1.8 million as well, $25 million total. And then number 10 is Bad Samaritan, which I did not get to see. David Tennant is in it, and he plays like a lunatic. So I think a lot of people who, you know, who love him as Doctor Who, and David Tennant, by the way, is an incredibly charming and funny guy. I'm really curious. It only made $1.7 million, so it didn't do very well at the box office. But I'm really curious about it because evidently he plays a real loon in it. Like he said himself, I saw him on the James Corden show, and he's like, yeah, this is completely different than anything I've ever played before. And yeah, he's not a good guy in it. So he's a loon. So that makes me interested. So anyway, that's your top 10. Let's see. Avengers probably will be number one again next week. The only competition it has is the new Melissa McCarthy movie, which I don't see outgrossing Avengers. And this movie Breaking In with Gabrielle Union. It's a thriller. And I don't see that one, you know, breaking any box office records at all. So Avengers Infinity War already at $1 billion worldwide, one of the fastest, highest grossing movies of all time, and it's still, like, killing at the box office. So that's your big winner, and it'll probably remain up there next week as well. Avengers, Overboard, A Quiet Place, I Feel Pretty, Rampage. Those are your top five movies at the box office right now. So there you go. Yeah. All right. Well, why don't we take a break? We'll take a break, and we got the news. And then after the news, we're going to talk about movies based on true events. What are some of the best movies based on true events? 312-981-7200 for talk and text. 312-981-7200 for true event movies. Coming up right after the news, which is next.